Peter walked. They did not run through the rain, Lord, or the burning sun. Some learn it early and some learn it late, that the road is winding, that the road is straight. And if it's too far,
travel
on. If it's too tight,
walk that
line. And if the road is too rough,
make it smooth.
And if you don't have the time,
there's no time to lose.
And if it's too far,
travel on.
And if it's too tight,
walk that line.
And if the road is too rough,
make it smooth.
And if you don't have the time,
there's no time to lose.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
All right, a few things to sort of get caught up on here as we still are seeing 2020's two results come in and so many other different things. Want to get a couple of catch-ups going here. We have made it abundantly clear how much is at stake, how much was at stake in 2022, and how it relates to so much being at stake in 2024. Just to, I feel like I'm quoting Rachel Maddow here, to give you some of the contours and texture of really what may happen in 2024, depending on the path forward. There is a stunning new article in Rolling Stone from Ryan Bort and Azawin Subsang about Donald Trump looking for ways to imprison journalists, jail reporters, if he is indeed able to retake the White House. Trump keeps musing about journalists being raped in prison, and he's not joking, they write. A knowledgeable source tells Rolling Stone that the former president has wondered how he might be able to jail reporters if he takes the White House, which, of course, is absolutely and completely chilling. You might remember, in fact, I think we even have a clip here, Donald Trump telling these sorts of stories about prison rape during his rally.
The leaking from the Supreme Court, first time it's ever happened, is just unbelievable. But you get the information very easily. You tell the reporter, who is it? And the reporter will either tell you or not. And if the reporter doesn't want to tell you, it's bye-bye. The reporter goes to jail. And when the reporter learns that he's going to be married in 2 days to a certain prisoner that's extremely strong, tough, and mean, he will say, you know, he or she, you know, I think I'm going to give you the information. Here's the leaker. Get me the hell out of here.
Yeah. So that is a joke about prison rape, but it doesn't stop there. And this isn't merely idle. The article explains, this year, as Trump has privately strategized about what a second term would look like, he's begun occasionally soliciting ideas from conservative allies for how the U.S. government and Justice Department could go about turning his desires for brutally imprisoning significant numbers of reporters into reality. Several months ago, the former president briefly asked a small gathering of allies and at least one of his lawyers what would have to be done to make that vision a norm. He said other countries do it, the implication being, why not here? Now, you know, as the article points out, Trump for a long time has sort of idolized or at least looked favorably upon the authoritarian states that do exactly that type of thing. North Korea, as the article says, does not tolerate free expression. China and Russia are well known for jailing journalists. Orbán, the Trump-endorsed autocrat of Hungary, has been targeting reporters, etc., etc. Trump has also been praising Xi in China for the so-called quick trials with a nearly 100% conviction of drug dealers in China, followed by the death penalty. This is why he's so taken with these sorts of folks. And here's my desire. You know, we've done the exercise in 2016 where many of us said, this is not an academic or theoretical distinction. When you consider the Supreme Court, the attack on press liberties, all of these things, Hillary Clinton for 4 years and Donald Trump for 4 years could not have been more different. And all those people who said, let's shake it up. Let's just see what happens. If it's not Bernie, it's Trump, then that's fine. Or I don't see any real difference between Hillary and Trump and I'll stay home. Or all the people that were saying these things. We effed around and found out, maybe would be the way to say it. And at this point, we need to believe the things Trump says. He would like to be able to imprison journalists when they say or write things he doesn't like. He's talking about it with allies and he's talking about it with lawyers. Let's not explore or find out what will happen. And that's why, as I said yesterday, this Trump DeSantis stuff, I could not care less about these individuals as people. My concern is how can they most damage themselves and their party such that none of them will win in 2024? And we will probably find that out relatively soon. A couple things I did not get to this week. MyPillow founder and CEO Mike Lindell was coping with the mounting losses on Tuesday by simply saying it's all stolen. It is all fraud. As it started to become clearer and clearer on Tuesday night, there's no red wave. There's like a delayed red ripple, maybe, and we're still waiting for some of the results. The Victory Channel brought him on. I have no idea what that is. They said, sir, Mike Pillow, please explain what's happening. And Mike Pillow said, listen, they're stealing everything. That's what's going on.
Mike, tell us what's going on.
By the way, the idea of even asking Pillow what's going on is hilarious. They do. Here's what he says.
Well, it's kind of what I expected. They're stealing everything. just in Herschel Walker's race alone, over 200,000 votes have been injected into his opponent.
They've been injected like bleach, folks. These are obvious. How many times, you know, how many times can they repeat the same stuff and people will fall for it? Injection now of votes.
To get to this runoff stage. They stole the governor's race in with Mastriano in Pennsylvania.
Mastriano simply lost.
Seen an early injection of 90,000 votes by the computers at Carrie Lake. They're trying to steal her.
So everything is stolen. Everything is stolen. This is really the epitome of brain worms, but it's also the epitome of if you have a hammer and all you have is a hammer and you believe the hammer is almost like a god, everything is a nail. And this is all they have left. The truth is not something they can accept. The truth is Trump hasn't been particularly good for the party. Won in 2016. 2018 wasn't so good. 2020 wasn't good at all. And 2022 was much worse than expected. It's not fraud. It's not injections or sauteing or grilling or smoking or curing ballots. It's not salting and peppering of ballots. It's not any of it. Trump is convincing these voters to select terrible candidates for the primaries. A lot of them are now losing. It's genuinely that simple. And they are throwing anything they can at the wall. And now what it is the epitome of if we won, it was rigged. If we lost, I'm sorry. If we won, it was fair. If we lost, it was rigged, even on the same ballots. And that's one of the funny things. You know, a few people emailed me over the last couple of days about what I tweeted years ago now about how is it that they're saying on the same ballot, the presidential results were rigged, but the Senate and House results are trustworthy when Trump lost, but their House or Senate candidates won. And it's starting to be the exact same level of incoherence. Again, why anybody would go to Mike Pillow for analysis, I genuinely don't know. One more clip I want to look at with you today. Without making fun of anyone, one of the things we've been talking about this week and last in the context of the midterm elections, when doing interviews like our correspondent Luke Beasley did at a Trump rally over the weekend, we have talked about, we're not joking here, this is serious. We've talked about how difficult it can be to distinguish what is a cult member who has been brainwashed, what is an ignorant person, and what is a mentally ill person. When someone says, I think JFK Jr. is alive and is the president right now, is that something that you believe because you're part of a cult? Is that something you believe because you just don't realize the truth about JFK Jr. and when he was killed and how? Or is that something you say because you're mentally ill? Or is it all three in some combination? The epitome of this Venn diagram is a tour called Reawaken America. Eric Trump, one of Donald Trump's children, has been a regular attendee at these events. This is a little clip from right before Tuesday's election where they are striking the ground with imaginary arrows to call upon God to win the midterm elections for them.
How many believe we're going to have a victory on Tuesday?
Yeah.
So come on, let's give a victory shout. Let's strike the ground and let's give a victory shout on the count of three. Are you ready?
Yeah.
So here we go. Get your arrows out. Just go strike.
And strike and strike.
Strike. Strike. Come on, keep going. Strike. Come on. Strike. Come on, strike the ground. Strike.
They've got the band and everything, huh?
Strike. Come on. Come on. Strike. Strike.
Ooh, this is, I'm cringing. I'm really cringing.
Come on. Come on, sing strike. 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 Come on, victory, 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 victory.
Oh. Okay. Where is this on our Venn diagram? Where is this on the Venn diagram of cult brainwashing, simple ignorance, and mental illness? I think it's a very difficult question, and I think it's an interesting question. It's not about making fun of these people. Now, you know why it didn't work, right? You know why Oz lost and Fetterman won. I was striking with imaginary arrows against Oz, and it just canceled it out. I did it so correctly and accurately. I'm kidding, but that's why this is all so insane. I don't know the answer. I genuinely don't know the answer. I don't know whether we say this is a form of mental illness and delusion, whether these are just folks who have been brainwashed, or whether they ignorantly believe that striking the ground with fake arrows affects election results. I do not know. But Michael Flynn and Eric Trump regularly participate in these events, and the interplay, the blending between sort of elected officials, although Eric Trump isn't an elected official, but political individuals, and these types of extreme religious events, there is no fine line between them anymore. They are together. The American right-wing political establishment and the extreme, I think these are evangelical folks, evangelical right-wing establishment have blended into one, and that's where we are. It's really scary stuff. Let me know what you make of it. I used to say, find me on Twitter. Twitter's increasingly unusable because of what's going on. So make sure you're subscribed on YouTube. Make sure you're following on Twitch. Make sure you've liked us on Facebook. I want to hear from you. Where is this on that spectrum or circle or triangle of ignorance, cult brainwashing, and mental illness? Let me know what you think. The David Pakman Show is a viewer and listener supported program. We depend on your support, and it is with your support that I believe we are going to grow the progressive media ecosystem at such a critical time for American politics. You can sign up at joinpakman.com. You can use the coupon code 24 starts now. Yes, indeed, 24 starts now. Let's chat with folks from the audience. We are going to take some calls at davidpakman.com/discord. That's how we always take calls. And I want to start today with Jack from Atlanta. Jack, welcome to the program.
Hey there, David. Appreciate you having me on. So I want to get straight to the point.
Please.
Given the GOP's disappointing performance across the country in many areas, well, they still did pretty good in Florida. I'm going to ask the one question on everyone's mind. Will Ron DeSantis be the GOP 2024 nominee?
I have no idea personally. I think, you know, we first don't even know whether he's running, but there is definitely a shifting sense that DeSantis is increasingly the leader of the Republican Party. And there's sort of two data points for that. Number one, Trump's picks, the contested ones. It's easy to pick 50 incumbents and get almost all of them right. But Trump's controversial picks, the contested picks, Oz lost, Mastriano lost, Herschel Walker, we're still counting ballots, almost certainly going to a runoff, Blake Masters losing, Carrie Lake counting, okay, et cetera. He doesn't make a big deal out of endorsing DeSantis. On the day before the election, he goes, yeah, yeah, reelect DeSantis. And then it's DeSantis who overperforms by 7 points and wins by 19. So there is clearly a shifting wind. We're hearing from some Republican insiders that they say this is the opportunity to dump Trump. And the betting markets have now shifted such that Ron DeSantis is favored in the betting markets to be the Republican nominee. So without injecting my personal opinion, just going into the facts, it does seem as though if both DeSantis and Trump run, it's not a given that this nomination goes to Trump. And this could make it a very crazy 2 years.
Oh, I agree. It's going to be one heck of a ride. So thank you very much, David.
My pleasure. Jack from Atlanta, great to hear from you. Just a reminder, if you want to get on with me today, your nickname in the waiting lobby should be your name and where you are calling from. Nicknames and this sort of thing will not get you on, just so everybody knows. Let's go next to Evan from Las Vegas, Nevada. Evan, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
I was wondering your opinion about when we heard Josh Shapiro's speech, I think it was last week, which was a great speech.
Yeah.
I thought he made a great point about like how Republicans have kind of become, even though they claim to be this freedom party, they're really the anti-freedom party. They're against abortion. They're against, teaching theories that they might agree with. They're against parents deciding with their kids what they want to do with a doctor, etc. Do you expect Democrats to kind of use that talking point more? Because I personally think it's a great talking point.
I think absolutely the case. I think it absolutely is the case that it should be used. Listen, they love talking about freedom, and yet they want to take freedom away from you in schools, in your bedroom, at your doctor's office, and on and on and on. And I think it makes absolutely perfect sense. It sort of straddles economic and social issues. They want to take away your freedom to organize a union if that's what you want to do. You know, all these things. I think, your freedom to shop around for prescription drugs or insurance or whatever the case may be. I think it's an excellent talking point. I'm not really like a focus group guy, so I think the experts need to do some brainstorming and sort of figuring out the exact right way to do it. But I think absolutely 100%.
Great. Yeah, no, I've used it just interpersonally with friends that maybe not aren't like crazy Trumpists, but I have some friends who are like, kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
And it seems to click. I mean, they're at least they don't have a good argument against it, you know?
Absolutely. Because it's the truth. That's the reality. The arguments work way. You know, Republicans have made a pretty good headway with arguments that are lies, but arguments that are the truth, I think, work even better.
Exactly. Okay, thanks, David.
All right, thank you, my friend. Very much appreciate hearing from you. Let's go next to Sammy from New York City. People really shot out of a cannon. Great to hear people getting right into their questions. Sammy, welcome.
Hey, David, I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you beautifully.
Oh, good. Sounds like things did better last night than we kind of expected, and I listened to your live stream. It was awesome, as usual. My question is, and I just tuned in, so I hope someone else didn't ask this, but my thought is Trump's going to announce something on November 15th, but I feel like he's going to wait. He wanted to wait and not announce right away because he felt like, let's just see like how all of these elections turn out. And if things are all like in his favor, then he would announce. that he was going to run. What do you think? Or is that?
So I had that idea as well. But the thing is, he's put so much weight and made it so obvious he plans to announce on Tuesday that even though a bunch of the people he picked lost, I don't know that he can go back on his word at this point in time. You know, there's some Republicans who are saying Trump's time is over. What he should do on the 15th is say, I'm not running, and endorse Ron DeSantis. That's what would be best for the Republican Party. Trump's a huge narcissist. And so it's very hard for me to imagine that he's going to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's true, too. But the other thing is, like, when he would say things like, oh, I have, like, I'm going to, you know, I have a better insurance plan than Obamacare.
Yeah.
And it's coming in 2 weeks. Like, everything's like, it's coming. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think he will announce. I don't think this is like the healthcare plan. And then it'll be interesting to see if and how the polling shifts, and if it's true that it's Trump's for the taking, or if the betting markets are right that DeSantis has a shot at this thing if he wants it.
Yeah.
The problem for DeSantis, just one other thing, excuse me. The problem for DeSantis is Trump can announce Tuesday, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. DeSantis just got reelected governor.
Right.
He can't look good if he announces a run for the presidency anytime in the next 6, 8, or even 10 months. So I think that's a limitation for DeSantis.
Me too. And even like on the Florida debate, when DeSantis was asked, look, are you, you know, tell the Florida people, like, you're going to stay,
serve,
you know, you're
going
to be governor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he wouldn't answer. He looked like a deer in the headlights.
He did. He seemed to malfunction and freeze up. Yeah. No, we'll see. That's a complication for DeSantis. How does he smoothly transition into that?
Yeah. And you know, David, the last time we spoke, I said, you know, how amazing I think you are. And I really, you have really turned me on to politics. Like, I wouldn't be listening to all of these other debates if it wasn't for you, like, live streaming. And I really appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate that very much. That's why we're doing it. Hopefully to get people engaged.
Yeah. And like, we all have to be, we have to know what's going on. We have to be informed.
Right.
And to make the right decisions. And I know you asked me if I was subscribed to the YouTube channel. I'm subscribed to all three.
I love it. Sammy, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Have a good day, David.
All right.
Thank you
too. There is the great Sammy from New York City with some very, very positive statements. That's for sure. Remember that if you want to get on, your nickname in the waiting lobby should be your name and your town, city or town, country, even if it's something other than the United States, where you're calling from. Let's go next to Joseph from Oregon. Joseph, welcome.
Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
It may be too soon to tell, but I'm interested in what you think the results of the midterms could mean for Trump from a legal perspective. If conservatives are suddenly ready to jump ship for DeSantis, do you think he could finally see a courtroom?
I think the answer is Trump could see a courtroom. I don't really think the midterms are the defining factor, though, and I'll tell you why. Many of the investigations have nothing to do with the midterms in the sense that they are state level elections. And then when it comes to the federal election, Joe Biden remains the president. I'm sorry, the federal investigation. Joe Biden remains the president. Merrick Garland remains the attorney general. And Merrick Garland made it clear whether Trump is or isn't running and whatever happens in the election, it does not impact how we are going to carry out the investigation. And I believe him to a degree anyway. So I actually think that Trump may think the course of the midterms and his potential announcement on Tuesday will change the course of the investigations, but I don't believe that they will.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
My pleasure. Great to hear from you. Folks, something about the calls this week, very, very strong. I have to tell you, I'm liking it. Let's go next to Steve from Illinois. Steve, welcome to the program. Steve. Steve.
Hello. Sorry. You know, I'm just learning how Discord works.
We've got a couple issues. It sounds like you're using speakerphone. We're also hearing all of your Discord notifications. So we've got a few different things. What's on your mind today?
You know what? I really just wanted to jump in and listen to this conversation and see how, you know, I woke up this morning with better news than I thought I would see.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I'm just kind of taking in anything I, you know, can get my hands on. And literally, this is my first time ever using Discord, so I really apologize.
No problem. Steve, listen, let me put you back on hold so you can continue listening to the conversation. I really appreciate that. Let's go. I don't know if this is Austin from Louisiana or Louisiana from Austin. Which is your name and which is your location?
My name is Austin. I am from North Louisiana.
Got it. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to come in and say that I was very disappointed with my state. I was really hoping that Gary Chambers would get a larger amount of the vote.
Yeah.
It's very unfortunate what happened. I went and did my civic duty for the first time. I went and voted for the first time. I'm very happy about it, but very not happy with the results. But I mean,
yeah.
I didn't really expect anything different.
And for people who may or may not know, the race for Senate in Louisiana, the incumbent John Kennedy, Republican, won with about 62% of the vote. Gary Chambers, just under 18% of the vote, which is certainly a disappointment, but also not altogether shocking, I have to say.
Well, it also has to do with the vote being split between the two big Democratic senators.
Yes, the other Democrat had like 12% or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Not so good. But voting was fine? Did you have long lines? Did you have any armed people intimidating you or anything?
I live in a white suburb, so
okay.
it was pretty easy for me.
No risks there. Yeah, no, it's horrifying that explains it. Oh, okay, so it was fine then. But such is the reality, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. All right. That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. I appreciate that. Why don't we go? Why don't we go next to Wasif from? Is it from Bangladesh?
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Wasif. Oh boy.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. There is a very strange sort of digital noise. I don't know where that's coming from.
Oh, actually, I'm in a university dormitory, so, you know, you will hear some noise, I guess.
I gotcha. Is there like a party really going on in the background?
Not really. You know, a lot of people are actually in this dormitory. That's why, you know, the population is high here.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay. People are studying. I'm sure it's only studying there. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so my question is actually related to a recent U.S. foreign policy, you could say. It's also related to my country,
okay.
And that's why I wanted to talk with you about it. So you guys know about the Rohingya crisis, right?
Yes.
That, the, you know, a lot of Rohingya refugees are in my country, right?
Yes.
So originally, Rohingyas are from the Rakhine state of, you know, Myanmar, right? So what's happening is, right now, my country is actually facing a big economical crisis. You know, Ukraine war is obviously playing a part of it. And the other reason is the establishment has some underlings who are actually very corrupt, and they have, you know, done some terrible stuff with our dollar reserve, basically. So what happened is that we are, you know, very short on dollar reserve, and we are, you know, our government is asking for, you know, IMF bailouts and, you know, potentially taking money from China, and not, you know, both of them are not really, you know, being, you know, as good enough as they expected it to be. So we are having a crisis, and, you know, the banks are not being able to open new LCs. So the price of, let's say, raw materials for, you know, making medicine and electronics are, you know, going high.
Yeah.
So during this situation, so, you know, like we are asking US for help, right? So what they're, you know, giving us suggestions, what they're providing is that they're going to give us, you know, some kind of support or something like that. But they really want us to do something. So what they're saying is that they're going
to
upgrade our military.
I hate to interrupt, Wasif, but the audio is a disaster. I'm not super familiar with what you're asking me, and I'm wondering if there is a question coming. I just don't know that I'm the right person to answer it.
Okay. So
hello.
I get it. I'll try to end it as soon as possible, like one or two sentences.
Okay.
So US basically wants us to... So the U.S. government basically wants us to annex the Rakhine state. and you know go to a war against Myanmar. That's what I'm saying. So my question is, like, right at this point when, you know, the US is basically calling out Russia for, you know, annexing all these four different regions in Ukraine, right? And they are doing the complete opposite and, you know, telling us to do the same thing that what Russia is doing right now. Do you think, you know, this is a really a good moral ground if this kind of news
No, goes, you're, you know, Wasif, you're exposing and, how know, people American foreign policy is basically what's useful right now. I don't even know if the things you told me are accurate representations of what's going on. I just don't know enough about the situation. But if it were true, the US is hypocritical on foreign policy all the time. I don't even know if what you're telling me is the case, because I just don't know enough about it. Okay, Wasif, thank you for the call. Let's take a very quick break. I'm not commenting on what he said because I don't know if it's true. Like, the US is demanding that Bangladesh do annexation. I've not heard that. I don't know if that's true. Let's take a quick break. We're going to go back to the phones in a moment. Stay with us. Let's hear from a few more people via the Discord, which you can find at davidpakman.com/discord. We are going to go next to Jeremy from Suffolk in the UK. Jeremy, welcome.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, sorry, I just joined. You kind of caught me off guard. I don't necessarily think I have a question per se. I guess I know the election's happening right now, and it's going much better than what we thought. But I still just have such frustrations with the younger generation, and mine kind of stems from I'm military. I'm stationed here in the UK, and I'm in a unit of like 250 people, mm-hmm. and in my section I supervise 40 plus people, and like I asked around, seeing kind of garnering interest of who's going to register, who's going to mail in a ballot. Like none of them had zero interest in getting out to vote and like making their voices heard. And the most frustrating one was I have a trans person in my flight. And when I asked her if she was going to vote, she kind of gave me like a shoulder shrug. And I think politics are for old people. It was super frustrating just to kind of deal with that kind of mentality.
Yeah, which of course is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? If young people say, I'm not going to get involved because politics is for older people, they're basically seeding that politics is for the older people who choose to vote. It's a self-fulfilling endless loop.
Correct. The one thing I wanted to say to her was, you know, there are two political sides in our country right now, and one of those sides would attack, or not even attack you, but like really... I guess attack you in the way you choose to live your life. And by you not voting, that kind of just like allows that to continue on.
Yep. Yeah. Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
All right.
Now, is the aside from being apathetic, is it also a right wing group of people?
You know, so I try to avoid that conversation mostly because there are people who are more commensurate with my rank that I can have that conversation with. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, most of them are more right-leaning. I do think the younger crowd is left-leaning, but at the same time, I try not to have that full discussion because it's not really my place to kind of influence how they view their politics. I can convince them to try and go out and vote, but me kind of expressing my ideas, that's like using my rank and my position to influence them. And that's like, I'm not okay with that. And it's not generally okay in the military.
Understood. Understood. Well, Jeremy, I appreciate the call. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. There's Jeremy calling in from the UK. Quite a situation he's facing there. Let's go to Chris from Atlanta. Chris, welcome to the program. Chris from Atlanta, welcome. You're on. And last chance for Chris from Atlanta. All right. Let's go to Aaron from Los Angeles. Aaron from Los Angeles, welcome to the show.
Hi, David. I was wondering if you have been keeping up with what's been happening with LA city politics at a local level. There's been quite a lot that's been going on the past month.
I really have not.
So I guess the first thing that happened was our the city council president had to resign following a leaked audio of a racism scandal.
Oh, yes. I did see that. Yes.
So there was that occurred. And now it looks like in light of the elections, Rick Caruso might win over Karen Bass. And I'm not sure if you know who Rick Caruso is.
I don't. I just have not been following that race.
So he was actually registered as a Republican for years before switching over to Democrat, I think around 2020. And Karen Bass is the more progressive candidate. But in light of everything that's happening with the homelessness and everything else, it looks like a lot of people are going with a more, I guess, center-right candidate that's posing as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess it's my apologies. It was just, my question was just like very niche and based around that.
All right. Well, I apologize that I'm not as familiar with that race as maybe you are, but I appreciate you engaging with it. And it's really important that we all engage with our local races. You know, it's like, it's very interesting and relevant to follow. Like, does Doug Mastriano become governor of Pennsylvania? Fortunately, he doesn't. But for most of us, the things that affect us day to day are local issues. Who's the mayor? Who are the city councilors? What sort of decisions are being made in our schools, et cetera? So good for you, Aaron, for following it all.
Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. There is Aaron from Los Angeles. Let's go next. Why don't we go to Mike from Massachusetts? Mike, welcome.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure.
I have a couple quick questions. I know you want to get to as many people as possible, but I'll try to make them quick. So while there's obviously still some races out there that still need to be called, some important ones, clearly this was not the red wave that the right was, you know, drooling about,
no.
You know, to totally dominate Congress and, you know, block everything for Joe Biden. What do you think the Democratic establishment is going to take away from this? Because one thing that people have pointed out is that the only Senate seat that so far they've been able to flip was Fetterman, who ran on a relatively progressive agenda. Do you think they take anything away from this to take it in 2024? Or do they just continue to keep the status quo because that's just what they like to do?
Unfortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, I would say unfortunately. This was such a unique midterm, and you're right, there's races where votes are still being counted, that I don't think there is one big takeaway. And the truth is, I've said for a long time, different types of Democrats make sense in different parts of the country. Would it be great to be able to run progressives in every district, every Senate race, and every governor's race and win? Sure. But that just simply doesn't work that way. You know, up in Massachusetts, the governor's race, Maura Healey, not like the uber progressive. And when you understand, well, Massachusetts has a history of more centrist Democrats and Republican governors, you have to kind of say, well, if we ran like a super progressive, it might end up with another Republican governor in Massachusetts. I'm sure you understand that. And so
in this particular case for Massachusetts, I mean, the Republican Party went from a very moderate like Baker and leaped all the way to a right wing nut like Neal. So
deal.
Yeah. I mean, deal. Sorry. Yeah. I think it was always a foregone conclusion that Maura Healey had this one in the bag.
Yes. No, not the best example this particular year, but it is sort of an example. So I think the takeaway for Democrats really needs to be different candidates in different races can make sense. Don't compromise on what are the most important uniting values. And I would say one thing about Fetterman, you know, there was this confusing moment about fracking. At the end of the day, Fetterman said he's for fracking. So he sort of backed off of as progressive a campaign as he had been running. And I know that there was some confusion during the debate about that, but he was like, no, I'm for fracking. So did he really run as progressively as maybe you're characterizing? I don't know. But listen, it's a great thing that Fetterman won.
That's fair. I agree with that. One more, if you'll allow me, and then I'll let you move on. This one's probably going to get a few eye rolls from the listeners, but I've just been really thinking about this, and maybe the perspective has changed since this election didn't go as we thought it might. But I mean, do you feel like as a country we're approaching a position where, you know, just based on the division that we have, the irreconcilable differences? I mean, do you think we're approaching a point where we have to have a legitimate conversation about is it in everyone's best interest to keep the country together? I mean, do you think we're approaching a point where we have to have a legitimate conversation about breaking the country up into two or more pieces?
I don't. And the reason why, honestly, is exactly as you said, two or more. There's a lack of contiguity in exactly how you would do it. Even if we agreed we've got to do it and it makes sense, which I don't believe anywhere near a plurality of people are at. I actually don't know geographically that there's any, you would end up needing like six countries, and obviously that's not going to happen, you know?
Fair. It's just hard to, imagine how we keep moving forward in a positive direction.
Yeah. How do we live with these people? I mean, it's an alternate reality, an alternate set of moral values. It's, no bar is too low for any candidate, no matter what, as long as they're not a Democrat, Herschel Walker being the perfect example. It's crazy. I share the desperation. I just don't think chopping the country up into two or more pieces is going to be a thing in the next few years.
I know. And I don't know if that would be the best move, because that would remove a serious roadblock for countries like China and Russia.
Absolutely.
You know,
it would wreak domestically.
Fair. Yeah. It is hard to imagine how we keep moving forward with such drastic differences between parties.
I'm with you.
All right. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks, Mike from Massachusetts. Great to hear from you. Let's go. Let's go back to Chris from Atlanta, who says he has fixed his audio. Chris, welcome.
Hey, thanks, David. Can you hear me this time?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, I was just sitting here, you know, watching election results and everything, and was kind of thinking about the Stacey Abrams race, and wanted to get your take on it as far as, you know, maybe where you think her campaign failed, if you're that familiar with it, and if you could maybe compare and contrast, say, her campaign to a similar one like Beto O'Rourke, you know, kind of similar matches there going up against incumbent Republicans, and where they failed and where they did well.
I don't know that Abrams failed per se. I think there were a bunch of different things going on. One is that Georgia really is a red state, particularly internally, even though, you know, Biden won the presidency. Georgia really is a red state when it comes to their internal politics. It's difficult to knock off an incumbent governor. Kemp, to some degree, resisted Trump's urges to overturn the election in 20. So not only did you have, I mean, listen, none of the Trump people were going to vote for Stacey Abrams. And then in addition, you have Republicans who may not have been big on Trump, who probably saw Kemp as like, hey, you know what? He's one of the good Republicans. Trump asked him for 11,000 votes and he didn't do it. So that helped him a little bit. And I think it was mostly that. I mean, I think Stacey Abrams is a great candidate. Now, you could say, well, Stacey Abrams is black. Was race a factor? She lost by a lot, you know, so, of course, you can't ever eliminate that as a factor. But I think it's more sort of like the status quo of Georgia internal politics.
Right. I mean, race and gender aside, I mean, that's a big hump to overcome in the first place. But from my perspective, you know, in Georgia and, you know, watching the media and everything like that is from my perspective, she didn't quite fight hard enough and wasn't vocal and out there in the news cycle enough. You know, I feel like she kind of almost fell into the trap of the GOP where they said, all right, well, we're going to bring Herschel and let Herschel dominate. Our voters are going to vote for us, you know, down ballot are for the most part anyway.
I mean, that happened, but I don't know how much it was an overt strategy.
Of the GOP?
Yeah.
You mean? Right. Maybe not an out and out strategy, like altogether for all their races, but, you know, I think they definitely, you know, Stacey and her campaign had opportunity to be more visible and they just weren't, you know.
Visibility also depends on the media's willingness to cover you, you know, and you're right that the Walker Warnock got a lot more oxygen and we did what we could. We would regularly cover the race, cover her debate, cover the disaster of Brian Kemp. But part of that is also right. the media.
But similar to Beto, I mean, you make your own news.
You do to some degree.
You have to get out there. And
listen,
I think
she's great. I think she's great. And sadly,
she didn't prevail. Yep. Same.
All right, my friend Chris from Atlanta, great to hear from you. Great to hear from everybody who I was able to speak to today. We're going to take a quick break, and I promise you, we are going to take calls again. All right, let's get to the mailbag for the week. info@davidpakman.com. I don't know if it's because it's election week or what happened this week, but some really just like extra wacky stuff came in. And of course, you all know I love to address substantive critiques. Let's start with a message from Silky about why I'm a coward and a hypocrite. Okay? Silky says, "Hello, Pac-Man fever, da, da, da." I don't know. "I saw your recent video where you watched the Fetterman-Oz debate, and you really showed your hypocrisy when you admonished people in your chat for saying things you didn't like about Fetterman because you hate your audience." That didn't happen. What I said was the people overtly making fun of the fact that he had a stroke, that was in poor taste. And I stand by that. Person goes on to say, mainly questioning his mental faculties, which is a valid concern. Okay, that's not what they were doing. "What's interesting, though," writes Silky, "is you're constantly saying similar things about Trump, Lake, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and other conservatives, even Tulsi Gabbard, questioning their mental state and health." That is not true. That is not true. This is a person who has not actually listened to what I've said. When it comes to Trump, we have had longtime concerns about the glitching and the twitching and the, you know, getting confused about what's coming out of his mouth, saying, "We need to look into the oranges of the investigation." And he looks confused and he can't get the word he wants. Rudy Giuliani sitting in front of him and he starts looking around. Where is Rudy? Where's Rudy? Rudy's 3 feet away. That's Trump, okay? Lake and Marjorie Taylor Greene, it's a disconnection from reality and a sort of radicalized ignorance. So it's different. I've never thought that Lake and Marjorie Taylor Greene were having cognitive issues. I think they're nuts. I think they're dangerous. But in any case, this is, as usual, someone who is reacting to things I haven't said. And Tulsi, I've never talked about Tulsi in this context. And lastly, Silky says, "And in vain with that," I think you mean in that vein, "why don't you invite some of these people onto your show? You do have a large enough platform. If they truly are as mentally unstable as you constantly claim, you should have no issue debunking their arguments or making them out to be fools, but you won't because you're a coward. We've invited all of these people. They refuse to come on. I had Ben Shapiro on some years ago. It was fine. It didn't go great for him, but it was fine. It wasn't hugely embarrassing. He's refused to come back on ever since." So they are invited. And people say, "David, you criticized Jordan Peterson. Why not have him on?" I've had him on and we've invited him multiple times. He refuses to come on. Okay. So come on, guys. Try to just be a little bit more reasonable in these emails. Patrick wrote in, who also writes in as Donna. I guess it's Donna writing in as someone named Patrick. I don't know. And Donna says, "Dave, you can spin it any way you want. I live in upstate New York, and oil and electric prices have tripled, and winter is not even here. Groceries through the roof. If we don't become energy independent again, it will get worse. Economically, everyone knows that energy is the heart of our survival. So spin it over and over again. I still listen to you once in a while." Yeah, this is someone who just doesn't know what's happening. First of all, if you said to someone, "What does it mean to be energy independent?" What do you think they would say? I think a lot of people, if you said energy independence, they would say, "We domestically produce all of the energy we use." Now, when Trump has been talking about energy independence, he's not even talking about that. Trump's talking about the import-export numbers specifically for oil. That's what Trump is talking about. And in the last couple of years of Trump, as well as in the first year of Biden, the U.S. roughly exported as much oil as we imported. That's what they mean by energy independence. So two things. One, it's not really energy independence. It's talking about the trade balance on oil. And two, it hasn't really changed since Joe Biden replaced Donald Trump. Do you think Donna has any idea about that? I think the answer is no. Do you think Donna's mind would be changed if I presented her with this information, or him if it's Patrick? I don't know. I think the answer is clearly no. Mimi wrote in about a free membership and says, "Hello, Mr. Pacman. Good evening. I would love to have a free membership, but can't afford it. I'm on a fixed income. I want you to know, keep doing what you're doing. Keep up the good work." Okay. I've said this 100 times before. Mimi, we love you here. Let me once get on the record how to get free memberships, okay? You can't email me about it. You go to davidpacman.com/free membership. There's 3 fields to put in. First name, last name, email. You put your name on the list. In order, we will give out the free memberships. You'll be notified by email. Do not email about the free memberships. Go to davidpacman.com/free membership. They're available. Timothy wrote in about phone banking. This is a really important email. "Yo, David, you say phone banking is important, and I agree. The problem is these Democratic committees want you to do it on their time and on their terms. I've reached out to many different Democratic committees saying, can you give me a list of Pennsylvania Democrats or Bucks County Democrats, and I'll call them to get out the vote. The reply is always, we don't do it that way anymore, but we do it this way. They go on to explain, they meet up on Zoom on a Saturday or Sunday, everyone does it together. I don't like this. Give me a list of people and I'll call them. If I get done the list, I'll come back for another list. I feel like these Democratic committees are getting in their own way." Yeah, listen, I am guessing that when it comes to phone stuff and giving people information about people's phone numbers or different things, there's probably some privacy regulations that need to be adhered to. But I agree with you. It can be way too complicated to help. I've heard from a ton of people who say, I wanted to phone bank. They told me, first, I've got to attend 2 different training sessions via Zoom at really inconvenient times to only get on the list. And then I needed to sign up for a shift. I get it. Everybody has processes. You got to have a process. You got to vet people, all of it. But you're dissuading people from doing it. There are people who would love to phone bank, but they can't do 2 training sessions during work hours to only get to the point where then they can pick a shift. So I do think something needs to happen. I don't know what it is, but I've heard that from a lot of people. Dan wrote in about Jordan Peterson. And Jordan says, why is it that nobody has pointed out to Jordan Peterson and others like him that the justification they use for religion, gender roles, etc., are the same as those for the authoritarian governments? He's literally saying society doesn't function properly when people don't fit into their prescribed role, all while lambasting socialism and communism for their supposed lack of freedoms. Not sure I'm making my point well, but it's really kind of comical if you follow what I'm getting at. I do. A lot of these folks, like Jordan Peterson, say communism and socialism are bad because they dictate how people should behave, what type of job they should have, all of these different norms. They take away freedom, which capitalism leaves for people. But on the other hand, they are extraordinarily authoritarian in how they believe society should be prescribing, whether it's gender roles or behavior or whatever the case may be. That's absolutely true. If you presented this to them, they would say, society is just a reflection of what the people want, whereas a communist or socialist government is an authoritarian imposition. And I do think that that's valid. The problem is you can get around that by saying, we're not communists and socialists. We just want to elect people who will actually do the things we want them to do. And then it is much more equivalent to saying, well, society or media or whatever. So good luck explaining that to them. But it's a very good point. Shana wrote in about YouTube and says, hey, David, I've had a paid membership to your show for several years, but just realized I'm not actually subscribed to your YouTube channel. I am now. Just thought I'd mention it and encourage other people to check. Love the show. Thanks for your excellent work. Yes, there are 2 things going on. One, phantom unsubscribes. There are people who genuinely were at some point subscribed to YouTube and they report, I'm no longer subscribed. I'm not claiming YouTube is unsubscribing people. Could be a glitch, could be anything. Double check. And number two, there's tons of people who see our clips on their home page on YouTube, so they don't even think I need to do anything else. Hit the subscribe button. It won't really change anything. You're already seeing our clips, but it is a really big deal for those subscriber numbers to continue growing. It signals to YouTube to keep recommending our clips to more people. So appreciate that very much, Shayna. Neil wrote in about something a couple people called to my attention and said, so on your Discord, it was brought to my attention that your Google profile info comes up as conspiracy theorist, which I find hilarious considering the time you've spent dedicated to combating many conspiracy theories that are harmful and unsupported. One thing to note is Google pulls this from your wiki page, which seems to be corrected. But for me and everyone on the Discord who checked, it seemed to be pulling some old info. Yeah, I saw this. Here's what's going on. There is a fight happening on both my personal Wikipedia page and the show Wikipedia page, essentially with vandals. It's called vandalism on Wikipedia, where they just come through, and because anybody can edit, they'll put in anti-Semitic stuff about me or conspiracy theorists or whatever the case may be. It's mostly caught automatically and fixed. But every once in a while, like when it heats up, the pages get locked so no one can edit. Imagine having such a sad life that you go around vandalizing Wikipedia pages. It's really pathetic. Mary wrote in about Mike Pillow pillows and says, hey, David, watched your show about using Mike Pillow's pillows. They are awesome. I've had mine for 3 years. Works wonders for my neck. However, he's a complete idiot and I will never buy his pillows again. Yeah, people have written in. Most, to be perfectly honest, most of the people who write in say the pillows are not good. But a couple people like Mary have written in and said, no, the guy's bonkers, but he does have a good pillow. As I said during our interview, I'm glad to try my pillow pillows. He said he was sending them to me for me to review them and that his assistant would reach out. Nobody ever reached out. I didn't get the pillows. So make of it what you will, but I'm still waiting, still glad to try them. Not so concerned that I'm going to go buy one myself, but if he sends one, I will try it. Get your emails in info@davidpakman.com. We are now into the post-2022 midterm phase. And it's going to get very, very nuts. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. And next week we are we're hitting. It is Election Day 2022. And as is often the case on election days in the United States, everyone has their take, everyone has their view, everyone likes to say this is the one thing that this is really all about. It's really, you know, in times past, it's really a referendum on Trump. Or this is really about corporations versus individuals or whatever. And almost always there really is no one thing. And so I've resisted that type of language, but this time there really kind of is the one big thing. The one big thing at stake here today is, are we going to make a move in the direction of being for democracy, where the candidate that gets the most votes wins and assumes office without controversy? Or are we going to make another move away from democracy, where even if you don't get the most votes, people claim you should still assume the office you ran for? And they may even be able to make it a reality if we aren't careful and if we don't make the correct votes today. That is fundamentally what today's election is about. Imagine 20, 50, 100 years from now and think about today as an inflection point. One story that could be told is, well, Trump came to power in 2016. He was defeated in 2020 after a very dangerous 4 years of insanity. And then the MAGA movement moved in 2022, took over the Senate and or House, a bunch of the governor's houses, then as a result of that was able to steal an election in 2024, leading to the end of American democracy as we knew it in 2028 and on downhill from there, right? That's one story that if we think about today as an inflection point could be told 20, 50, 100 years from now. There's a different story which could be told, again, because it's an inflection point. It could be Trump did come to power in 2016 and then was defeated in 2020 after that very same dangerous 4 years of insanity. But then in 2022, a little bit of sanity returned. There's still tens of millions of lunatics and we see them all the time, but a little bit, just enough sanity returned that the tens of millions of anti-democracy lunatics were defeated on November 8th, 2022. Absolute disaster was just barely averted. And then things got on to a more logical path in 26 and in 24, 26, 28, et cetera. It's a divergence point. It's an inflection point. And those are two possible stories that could be told. Consider these contrasts. Rolling Stone's Azawin Subsang and Patrick Rice are reporting that, quote, Trump is calling Republicans to ask how many times they will impeach Biden if they win tonight. Think of that. Now, on the other hand, Joe Biden and Barack Obama have been touring the country saying we need to save democracy. This is not fundamentally about should the top tax rate on the richest Americans be 35, 37 or 39%. That's a question. It's a perfectly reasonable question. And at times past, we talked a lot about questions like that. We're dealing with something very different here. Okay. Now, by the way, in the meantime, Joe Biden is predicting that Democrats win on the basis of an improving economy. That's also possible. We just don't know based on the polling right now. The pollsters really don't know, and we're going to talk about that next. But before we do that, I really hope every single one of you that votes in the United States has already voted or is planning to vote. And I keep getting this in my email. David, I care about what's happening, but one vote never makes a difference. These elections never come down to one vote. So it's really hard to feel like my vote actually matters. And I've been talking about this on our streams lately. I understand that feeling. I think the same thing. When has a gubernatorial race or a Senate race come down to a single vote? Therefore, my vote doesn't matter. Wrong. The way you have to think about it is as follows. Tons of people have that thought. Tons of people consider staying home because it never comes down to one vote. And they all say my vote isn't going to make the difference here. Think about that as a group you're a part of. And once you think about it that way, elections often come down to do the people who wonder.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From the UN Climate Summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, this is Democracy Now!
Those who demonstrated yesterday did so again.
What happens in Sharm stays in Sharm and does not represent the rest of the country. There is a certain bubble here in a UN protected zone. Of course, the same everyday violations are continuing at the same pace all over the country.
From the climate summit in Sharm el-Sheikh to a climate of fear in the rest of Egypt, we'll speak with the leading Egyptian human rights advocate, Hossam Bahket. Human rights about COP27, human rights in Egypt, and why civil society did not call for a boycott of this summit. Then we'll talk to one of the most prominent climate activists in Africa, Vanessa Nakate from Uganda.
Big oil and gas companies and the leaders who are beholden to them are not trying to keep 1.5 degrees Celsius alive in this place. They are actually trying to suffocate 1.5, but they do it quietly and slowly so that no one will know until it's too late for all of us.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. The United Nations General Assembly has approved a resolution calling on Russia to pay reparations for its invasion of Ukraine and other violations of international law. A little less than half of the General Assembly's 193 members voted in favor of the resolution, while 14 voted against it, including Russia, Iran, and China. 73 countries abstained, including Brazil, India, and South Africa. Ahead of Monday's vote, Ukraine's UN ambassador said it was time to hold Russia accountable.
Accounts of atrocities committed by Russians in the occupied territories, murder, rape, torture, forced deportation, looting, they all speak for themselves. Millions of Ukrainians have been forced to leave their homes and seek shelter elsewhere. Ukraine will have the daunting task of rebuilding the country and recovering from this war.
President Joe Biden said Monday he does not believe China is preparing to invade Taiwan. Biden's remarks at the G20 summit in Bali, Indonesia, came after his first face-to-face meeting as president with Chinese leader Xi Jinping. Speaking to reporters after their three-hour talk, Biden dismissed his critics' claims that U.S. military maneuvers in the Taiwan Strait are provoking a new Cold War.
I absolutely believe there need not be a new Cold War. I've met many times with Xi Jinping, and we were candid and clear with one another across the board. And I do not think there's any imminent attempt on the part of China to invade Taiwan.
Here in Egypt, imprisoned British Egyptian writer and technologist Alaa Abdel Fattah has ended his hunger strike after more than 7 months. The news came in a letter from prison today to his family. They're scheduled to have their monthly visit with him on Thursday, one day before his 41st birthday. In the letter, Alaa wrote, quote, "I'll see you on the visit day and tell you everything then, and we'll get back to long letters after the visit. The important thing is I want to celebrate my birthday with you on Thursday. I haven't celebrated for a long time and want to celebrate with my cellmates. So bring a cake, normal provisions. I've broken my strike. I'll explain everything."